Access number 17520, Ronald Herford, Reel 3.
Von Herford, Reel 3. So you had a 3-day journey on this train, not knowing where you're going?
No.
What sort of country were you passing through?
We went down through France, through Rennes, and different parts of France. I can't remember them all now. I know we went down the Rhine Valley, and all we could see was all these grapes being grown. They weren't in bloom or anything like that. There was no grapes on them because this was the middle of the winter. And we eventually got to a place called Freilassing in Germany. And from Freilassing we went to Laufen. And from Laufen station, which was only a clapped out old shed, you know. And we were marched down to the where we were going to stay the rest of the duration of the war, which was a camp in Laufen.
What was that camp like? You know, where was it situated?
Right in the middle of it. It's only a little village, actually, right alongside of the River Salzach. But it was a big slosh. And there was Americans, Poles, all sorts there. Jerseymen, Guernseymen, Englishmen.
So would it have been the Americans and Poles? Would these have been prisoners of war?
No.
Or were they all civilians?
They were all civilians. These Americans were picked up in Germany. You know, and the Poles. Whether they'd done anything wrong or not, I don't know. I never asked.
Were you kept into your own national groups in the camp?
No, I was with Jerseymen and Englishmen and the Guernsey people, you know. It was the only three that I knew anything about. I never had nothing to do with the Americans and the Poles.
What were the conditions like in that camp? You know, your accommodation, first of all.
Our beds were three up on the bed, you know. And it was only planks for your bed. You might have 8 or 9 planks to make your bed. And then they put a palliass, which was with straw in it. And that was your bed and one blanket.
And how about your food?
Well, they had Red Cross parcels there then. We used to have cheese in little tins. And dried egg in little tins, and bully beef, and these steaks that they put in tins in them days. It was all tin stuff.
Did you have a cookhouse? You know,
we had a cookhouse. You had to go down and peel potatoes, and it wasn't 2 or 3 pounds at a time. It was underweight at a time, because it was 2,000 in there, I suppose. You had to take your turn doing your fatigues, you know. If you weren't doing that, you had to either clean the toilets or sweep the verandas. And it was big rooms, you know, massive rooms. It was a slosh.
How about work? Did you do any work there? You know, were you sent out work?
I went out on the farm working, because after nearly 2 years of living on tin food, I wanted fresh vegetables, you know, and fresh eggs, and the farmer I work for, he said to me, "You will get up at 6 o'clock in the morning." I said, "You must be joking too," because he couldn't understand English. And I never used to start till 9 o'clock. But I used to get up sometimes early and take the eggs.
Or pinch them?
Yeah, I'd take them. and I'd go back to the main camp, and I'd barter for a bar of chocolate or a tin of cheese or something like that, or tea, you know.
Did you live on the farm then?
Yes, yeah.
What were they like, the Germans you worked for? Were they kind to you, apart from asking you to get up at 6 o'clock?
They used to talk so fast amongst themselves that you couldn't understand it. Only now and again I'd catch a word, I'd think, oh, they're talking about me, you know. But
were they hostile?
Not really, not to me, because they were the more or less the country type farmer, you know. And they used to put the coffee in the middle of a table, and you'd have a spoon, each one of you, and you had to keep on. And there was trickles of coffee to each one of you. You know, you can't even keep the spoon clean, can you, eh? Not making a mess, you know. No, I said to him, I'm not having that, because there was an old granddad there, you know. Used to put me off. And we had a Polish girl, was Regina, and a Polish nipper, which was Tadeusz. And they used to work there as well, you know. But I said, I don't want that. And they asked me, well, I said, well, we don't drink like that where I come from. So they let me have my own cup. But the old, there's a photo of her there somewhere. Her name was Sensi. And she used to make me some biscuits for Christmas. She made me a little bundle of biscuits for Christmas. They do that over there, you see. And we had all these different sauerkraut meals. When I seen them making that, I didn't want it. They used to put a cabbage in a barrel and put salt on the top of it and tread on it with no shoes on. And the old chap used to get in the barrel, and I was saying, oh, you know, he's stinking feet. So I didn't want none of that. But I used to have my Red Cross parcel, you see. And I'd ask her to cook me something from that. But it was still tins again. No.
What work were you doing on the farm, Ron?
Absolutely nothing. I used to chase two young colts around this field nearly every day. And then one day I thought, well, I'm fed up with this. Now he said, come with us, spreading the muck. And their cows, they left in their stables all the year round by the summer months. And then, of course, you've got piles of dung this high anyway. Mind you, it keeps it very warm. And we had to go and spread that stuff out on the field. And then when the grass was grown, you had to cut the grass and take it to the cows. Little bundle each, you know. And then we, when they was time for what they call it, when you got the wheat coming in, you got these big machine comes in. What they call it? Yeah, the threshing machine. Yeah, we had to do the threshing. And I had to tie the sacks up with a bit of string. That's all I did. But there used to be quite a few farmers from different, used to come, they used to help one another do it.
Were you always treated well by the other farmers?
I never had nothing to do with the other farmers, no.
Did you have to wear a uniform when you went out to work?
No. In fact, I was taken for the German very often. There's things I used to get up to go, I'd turn your hair black and blue.
Come on, tell me some of them. No,
that was very, very personal things I used to do with them, you know. No, I can't tell you that. I had a Russian girl I used to go out with.
Would she have been a slave, you know, a
worker?
Slave? Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah, she was a worker there, you know.
What was her history, was it?
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't speak Russian, you know. Or I'd give her a bar of chocolate and things would go right what I wanted, you know, at the time. Which is only human nature after all, isn't it?
Then how was she treated by the Germans?
I never knew, because I couldn't understand her language. She used to speak a little bit of German, the same as me, but I couldn't understand what she was on about. I was to go and see my mate, was in one of those photos there. He was a boxer. He fought professional when we got released in England. And I went there once, and he was sparring up to this, because it was a German woman was there, his farmer, in charge of him. And I started to laugh, you know. And she took umbrage about this. And she came for me. And as she came for me, I ducked, and I flung her straight over my head. And he said to me, "You've killed her." I said, "I haven't." He said, "Yes, you have. Look at her. She's flat out," but she wasn't. She was only knocked out. So I never went there again. But I used to see him every night, you know. We were allowed out till 9 o'clock.
It would seem, from what you're saying, you had quite a bit of freedom there.
I did, yes, yes, we did. Then...
How about raids, though? You know, because we're now getting into 43, 44, aren't we?
This is the end of 44 when I went. There was a lot
of
raids.
Yes, 44, yeah. Yes.
Well, then when the raids became very... well, they were nearly there every night, practically. We were taken back to the camp, the main camp. We weren't allowed out then. And our comp senior was Ambrose Sherwell.
Oh, was he? He was your the captain of the camp?
Yes, because he took over from Frank Struwand when he came there.
What was he like as a captain of the camp? Do you know, was he respected?
Well, he couldn't do very much, really. You know.
Did he look after you as much as he could?
Well, you'd go to him and he'd have some complaint and he'd say, "Well, what can I do?" You know. He said, "I'll tell you what I will do for you." I said, "What's that?" Because after and I told you about him hitting me with their belts. Well, I had a big lump come over this left eye. And there was a Spanish doctor there, Dr. Bill Bale. And he said he'd take it out, he'd operate on me, you know. So I said, okay. So we get down to the hospital in the camp. And he put me in a straitjacket. Then six men held me down. And he operated with a cutthroat razor and a pair of scissors. And he tried with a pair of scissors to cut it. And every time he went to cut it, they overlapped and they wouldn't cut. So he did it with a cutthroat razor. And I said to him, "I'll get off this table, I'll kill the six of you." But they were only doing what they thought was best for me, you know. And I've got that there. Because it only just moves a bit, you know. And then I got into a lot of trouble when I came back. Because it hardly moved. It only just moves a little bit now, eh? And I was dancing up with the bowler. And I must have lifted my eyebrow, you know. And this fella said to me, "I seen you winking at my young lady." I said, "I wasn't winking at her." He said, "Yes, you were. So it was outside and put your fists up again, you know." And that's got me into a lot of trouble, that always. And any time I have a photo taken, I always make sure that eye isn't, I'm always facing the other way, you know. Because I had a sister was as round as that, and as thick as that. And so it was gradually coming over my eye, you know.
So you had no anaesthetic at all?
No. No. But at 8, he did a good job, I thought. Well, sure, well, then, when he seen me, he said, "You're in trouble, Urkel." I said, "Yeah." He said, "What's happened?" I told him. Well, he said, look, would you like to go out for a walk? Because he could go out for a walk. They used to take us out for walks, 50 or 60 of us at a time, you know. So he took myself and a little Dutch boy, I can't think of his name, and he took us out to a lake. And we went rowing on the lake while he sat on the bank. And that's the only thing he actually did for me, you know.
Yes, I wonder, do you think he did what he all he could?
He only did what the Germans wanted him to do, you know. Frank Struban put me in prison while I was there. Because we were counted in rooms, you know, and it's a great big massive square. And once the rooms had been counted, all of them, then we were dismissed, you know. And it was, we must have had 3 foot of snow, I suppose. So I said to Bill Weir, look, we've been counted. Let's go round the back of everybody and up the stairs. And we went back in the room. We got her up the stairs, and up the top was Frank Struband. And he caught me. He said, got you. And we had to clean the toilets, Bill Weir and myself, for 2 weeks for that. That was the only time there.
Well, what was his role, Frank Struband?
Well, he was senior until Sherwall arrived, you know.
As you say, it probably was a difficult job keeping the balance. But did you have the feeling that he had the welfare of the, you know, internees at heart?
He did, yes. We used to get the news every night because of the Major Davis was one of them. And I can't think of their names, some of them.
But he was the one who gave you the news?
Yeah, they had a wireless there. And he used to give us the news, you know. England is shut down so many planes, you know, and gradually advancing. We were all saying, well, it won't be long now, you know. But then the German officer called out our numbers on parade and said, tomorrow morning you will empty the coal up at the... So I said to Bill Weir, because he was one of them with me, Dudley Savage was Dudley, another bloke. There was four of us. They want us to unload the coal on a Sunday morning. So I said to Bill, well, I'm not doing it. He said, if you're not doing it, I'm not going to do it. So we didn't go. But the next day our name was called out. Our numbers in 1072 mine. And we had to go and see the German commander in charge. And he gave us all a week. Three of us had to do a week solitary confinement, which meant back to 3 days with no food. But I was too crafty for them because I took a ball of string with me. And I used to drop it out the window. And my mates would put a tin something open, you know. And I'd pull it up and I'd have that, but they didn't know. You had to be crafty, you know. And I set fire to the camp one day.
Tell me about that.
Well, we were looking out the windows and there was these palliasses down in the courtyard. And I said, I'm going to set fire. And they said, don't be so stupid, you know. I said, I am. I just dropped a lit cigarette down onto it, you know. And it was on fire. And of course, all the Germans come tearing around, you know. And we were all laughing up because of these. We were four stories high. And they turned the hoses up. And anybody who was wet was in trouble. So when we knew that, I jumped in my bedroom, I fully clothed. And they never caught me. In fact, I don't think they caught anybody. Everybody was jumping into bed, you know. But you did things like that just for devilment.
How about social activity? Did you have any sort of classes or shows or music there?
We used to have dance lessons. Yeah. Oh, it was just to play football as well. There was football every other day, practically.
Who gave you the dance lessons?
Cheeseborough. Mr. Cheeseborough. He was a good... used to teach dancing in Guernsey. The old dog wants to come in by the sound of it.
Who did you dance with?
I danced with Roy Marshall. And I got on quite well. One week he would push me backwards, I'd be the lady. And the following week I would push him. Well, I suppose there was two or three dozen of us in there at the time, you know. Just to pass the time of day.
How about football as well, you were saying?
Oh, yeah, I played football for Guernsey against Jersey. Because there's a Marathi called over here before the war and after the war goes on. It's an inter-Ireland football game. And, of course, we were only seven aside. It weren't any more than seven to each team because they... It was like a billiard table with a lot of banks around it, you know. And if we were losing, there was only one answer, kick the football in the river. And a German, but there was dogs outside the barbed wire. And either the dog would go in, if he didn't, there was a young lad used to go in and get the ball for us, you know, things like that. Yeah. In fact, I went on holiday and I said to my wife, I said, I'd like to go back to Louth and to see what it's looking like. And I went in the Louth and the camp I was in, and I asked this German if I could look around. He said, yes, by all means. And he asked me why, and I told him I'd been here during the war, a prisoner. And he said to me, did you play football? And I said, yes. And he said, I'm the young man that used to get the ball for you out of the river. And I couldn't believe it, you know. I could not believe that I'd met that fella. This was just on 50 years, you know. But he was there. Amazing, isn't it?
And how about the raids? Were they frightening for you? Because I suppose... the camp must have been quite a target, being a Schloss.
Well, it was only a one town little village. And Salzburg wasn't far away, and I think Salzburg would have been far more important than Munich and places like that instead of a little village like Laufen. And I think that the English people knew we were there. You know, because there had been quite a bit of letters going back to England, because we had Red Cross letters once a month. We could get in touch with people in England, you know.
How about people in Germany? In Guernsey rather, could you contact your family?
I was allowed one letter once a month, either to my sister in England or to my mum in Guernsey. And we had a code, my mum and I. And I'd say that I seen Cairn today, which meant that the RAF had been, because my brother Cairn was in the RAF. And she knew then that we were being... Well, we never had nothing around us. Laufen, there was nothing touched in Laufen.
Was there any sign of... Other
raids, yeah, planes, bloody dozens, you know, there was dozens of planes going over. But I'm sure, you know, this, what do they call it, the V2, wasn't it? I'm sure it was being made not far from where we were staying. Not just outside Salzburg, I'd say it was. Because we could hear these things, you know. Whether it was or not, I don't know. I always had that impression it was. Yeah. I don't know.
How about the liberation. You know, who were you liberated? When did you hear that? Were you liberated before the end of the war, or did it come after?
We got liberated on the 8th of May.
The day war ended?
Mm.
So could you tell me about that, your liberation, how you first were aware of that?
It was by the Americans. We got liberated by the Americans. And there's some great big doors, gates, and coming into the camp. And the first we knew of it was when the tanks just smashed straight through it. Great big iron gates they were. And then they took the German commandant, and Sherville was there as well. And as soon as we seen the gates were open, we were out in the little village, you know. But it was, but the Americans didn't know we were down there, because I was with Roy Marshall, and we walked across the field, and they told us to stop. I said, "What do you mean stop? We're English." They called us Fifth Column, because there was a Fifth Column as one in them days. And until they realized what we were, I said, there's at least another 2,000 down there in the village, which is this Americans, Poles, Russians. They couldn't believe it. We all had the white flags out, and there was a few Union Jacks, you know, but they hadn't seen them. And when they did realize that there was, they gave me a tin of white pears. And they asked me if I knew was there was any anything to drink around the place. I said, "Yes, I know where there's some drink." They said, "Will you come with us?" I said, "Yeah." So we had a wheelbarrow, and this American soldier said, "Right, we'll go and get this stuff where you say it is." So we went. We filled this wheelbarrow with Bowles Curico. It was all in these jars.
Where was it? How did you know where it was?
Well, I'd been... we used to go up and grow our own veg up for the camp as well. And I knew this big house was a lovely place, you know, and I thought there's bound to be something in there. It was Bowles Curico, Bowles Cherry Brandy. It was all Bowles, in fact. Bowles Gin. It was... So we loaded this wheelbarrow up, and I'd never drank in my life, you know, because I was only a nipper going there. So he said, "Do you want any?" I said, "I'll have a Bowles Cherry Brandy," because it sounded all right to me, you know. So he gave me this Bowles Cherry Brandy. It was in these yellowy stone jars, and I drank it, and I was as pickled as a coot. Because I didn't know what it would do to you, you know. And I never seen him from that day to this. But he took the rest of it. So they had a good drink, you know. And then there was look after yourself again, you know.
Did you hear, I suppose it would have been a bit later, Churchill's declaration about the liberation of the island?
No. I wasn't. That was after. We stayed there till... We were a good 6 weeks before we came back. Good. We got liberated in May. We didn't come back to England until July. So it was over 6 weeks, you know, before we came back. And I landed at Hendon.
What was that 6 weeks? What were you doing during that time? Were you still in the camp?
I used to go back to the camp to sleep, yes. But in the daytime, I was looking at the fro lines. Wollen Sie mit mir heute spazieren gehen? Jawohl, mein Herr, ich will.
What was the situation of the Germans in that area when they were liberated? You know, was there much retribution against them? Or was it more fraternization?
There was a little fraternization, bound to be. You just imagine any man that's been incarcerated for 2.5 years. And he gets out and he sees another opposite sex. All right, we shouldn't have done things like that, but some of the girls were just as keen to meet us as we were to meet them. You know?
So it was a sort of mutual.
More or less,
attraction, yes.
I pinched two bikes, so my Fraulein could have a ride around with my mate, you know, the boxer. And we used to go around, and I'd pinch a chicken and give her a chicken, because I knew that they didn't have much to eat. So you more or less help one another, you know. There's no Russians around us, and only the few that was in the camp, and they couldn't understand what we said to them, and I didn't understand them, you know. And some of the Americans didn't want to leave, you know, because I'm sure they were born in Germany, but from American families, you know. I don't know. There's my wife.
So you were repatriated, were you, in July?
Around about the end of July before we got back.
And that was first of all to the UK, was it, Ron?
Yeah.
Whereabouts in the UK?
Hendon.